Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
7:07 here on this Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us on O'Connor and Company. 7:35. Reed Rubenstein, he's with America First Legal. Two questions. Number one, what the heck went into this raid on the president's home? He wants answers from the DOJ and from the National Archives Administration. But second question, why can't we take a look at Joe Biden's records as vice president, especially those involving Hunter Biden? I think those are worthy of investigation. Yeah. So we'll talk to him about that coming up in 30 minutes. We're also going to talk to Maria Leaf of The Examiner at 7:45. And then at 8:35, we'll speak with Jeremy Adams. He has written a book about what it's like to be a teacher these days, as we are suffering a teacher shortage, as you know. Also with us all morning long, it's the one and only Liz Scheld of American Greatness. Good morning, Liz.
Great morning, Larry.
Yes, it is a great morning. But not if you're a teacher in the public school system and you want to be factual and accurate and truthful with your students. We're seeing this play out in Stafford schools right now. And Chris Chandevel is senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom. He joins us now. I'm not really being hyperbolic here. This is a teacher who has been told to adhere to a student's preferred pronouns, but those preferred pronouns don't accurately and factually and truthfully reflect reality. And this teacher did not want to be forced to lie. It's really that simple, isn't it, sir?
Yes. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Liz. Thanks for having me on. That's exactly right. You're not exaggerating at all. What happened in this case, Peter Vlaming was a high school French teacher at West Point, Virginia. He'd been teaching there for almost 7 years. He was a hardworking father of four. His students loved him. He loved his job. He always got glowing reviews. And yet, when he had a student who had been in his class previously, who informed him that the student was going to start identifying as transgender and using a new name and using new pronouns, he told the school and told the student, "Listen, I'm happy to do my best to accommodate the student, to even use the student's new chosen name, and to just avoid using pronouns altogether," because he didn't want to say anything that might offend the student. And yet what the school said was, "That's not good enough. You have to affirmatively use biologically incorrect pronouns to refer to this student." And when Peter said, "Listen, I can't do that because I think that would be speaking something that's untrue to my students, and that wouldn't be fair to them," the school said, "Well, that's not good enough for us. You're fired."
What kind of appeal process does a teacher have in this case, and where does that lead exactly? Are you in the process of that now, or has he already exhausted his appeals through his collective bargaining agreement, and now that's why they brought you in?
So the process that he was given in the school system, if you can call it that, is basically he got several demands, including written demands, from the school officials there at West Point that gave him what they called a directive. And the directive was, you must affirmatively use these biologically incorrect pronouns. And if you don't, we're going to recommend your firing to the school board. And like I said, when he said he just couldn't do that consistent with his faith, they did recommend his firing to the school board. He did get a hearing before that school board, but the school board very quickly just rejected all of his his religious objections and conscientious objection to doing what they were demanding that he do, fired him. So we ended up having to file a lawsuit on his behalf in Virginia State Court. And that lawsuit was dismissed pretty quickly by the judge without any explanation behind the judge's decision. So we've appealed that decision to the Virginia Supreme Court, and we're in the process of filing our briefs in that court now.
Chris, are there suits in other states? Is this just a Virginia thing, or has this cropped up all over the country?
Oh, it's absolutely cropping up all over the country. So we represented a college professor in Ohio who ran into the same situation with the school officials there. He was willing to use the student's last name and again, be perfectly respectful in the classroom, but just couldn't use that biologically incorrect pronouns. His university disciplined him. We have a teacher in Kansas that we represent Same thing. The policy there was you must affirmatively use these biologically incorrect pronouns. You can't just respectfully decline to use pronouns. So she's being disciplined by her school. They actually have a policy that says if a student doesn't want you to tell their parents that student is going by a different name and going by a different pronouns at school, you as a teacher basically have to lie to the parents to keep them in the dark and not let them know what's going on at school. So we're seeing it really is.
Chris, do you think this is going to go to the Supreme Court ultimately to just be decided since it's happening in so many different areas in the country?
We do think it's an issue that eventually the U.S. Supreme Court may very well have to weigh in on. In this particular case in Virginia, we've brought all state claims. And the reason why we've done that, so all of our claims are under the state Virginia state constitution, the free speech protections, the religious freedom protections. And the interesting thing about Virginia, you know, Virginia is really the birthplace of religious liberty. And yet, despite that, there have been very few cases talking about what Virginia's constitution means when it says that it protects religious freedom. So we're giving the Supreme Court of Virginia a chance to weigh in on that question, and we hope give us a decision in our favor that makes it very clear that the government can never force you to choose between publicly disavowing your core beliefs and keeping your job.
Sic Semper Tyrannis is the motto for Virginia. But who knew the Tyrannis would be a school board? Chris Schandoval is our guest. He's senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom. And you'll remember ADF also took up the case of Tanner Cross in Loudoun County. That was a similar situation. In fact, the fact that you won in Loudoun County with Tanner Cross at the state level, I would think that that already sets the precedent. Why do you keep having to fight the same fight in the same venues?
Sure. So with Tanner's case, that case was decided kind of at a preliminary stage of the case. And so we won a kind of temporary injunction that went up to the Supreme Court and got affirmed. But that decision was kind of an unpublished order that doesn't have any precedential effect. So that case is more or less been put on hold, it seems like, while this case goes forward. So this will be the case that sets the precedent for the entire Commonwealth of Virginia.
By the way, it is ironic that the teacher in question here is a French teacher, considering in the French language,
two genders.
Yeah, I mean, it's very specific. You have to get genders right in the language, otherwise you're not doing it properly. Can you sort of touched on it, but if you could be explicit here with regard to what the defense is going to be here, what your argument is, because I know you raised the freedom of religion, but you don't have to have a religious faith to want to adhere to the accuracy of our language and the reality of science and sex, right? I mean, it may aid in your argument, but isn't this ultimately just a free speech question?
Oh, that's absolutely true. So we brought a religious freedom claim, but we've also brought an independent free speech claim. And the claim there is basically, you know, listen, Peter wasn't fired for anything that he was saying in the classroom. He was fired for what he couldn't say. Huh. And so this is really a case about compelled speech. The school was trying to force him to use these pronouns and basically to endorse the government's viewpoint on a controversial issue like gender identity.
Okay.
And so that's the claim. And the school's defense is basically, listen, you work for us. So when you set foot inside that classroom, we own everything that you say to your students. Hmm. So we can force you to endorse our beliefs on issues like this. And there's really nothing that you as a teacher can do about that.
By the way, real fast, I mean, and that, listen, for free marketeers and people who believe in private businesses' right to conduct their business, that's one thing. But the difference here is that employer is the government.
It's the government, right.
So in other words, if my company wanted to force me to utilize pronouns, that is a different fight, is it not?
It is a different fight, right. But so what our position is, the government shouldn't be putting a thumb on the scale of one side of the debate or the other and really ending that debate. Yeah. Because even if you happen to agree with, you know, the position that your government is taking today, you know, they might take the complete opposite position tomorrow. Yeah. Or the government in the county over might take the complete opposite position. So it's just a dangerous thing to give the government that kind of power.
That said, if my company does make me start doing that, can I call you at Alliance Defending Freedom on that one as well?
We'd certainly be happy to chat.
All right. Thank you. Hopefully that will be the case. I shouldn't say that. Let's just end this now before it gets bad. Chris Schandoval, Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you, sir. And thank you for taking up this fight.
Thank you. Happy to do it. Take care.
7:15 now, WAVL traffic. And no, the irony is not lost on us that after doing that very important segment on a teacher getting fired for using correct pronouns later this morning at 8:35, we're going to have a guest to talk about the teacher shortage.
Imagine that.
In America.
Imagine that. I mean,
connect the dots, folks. Connect the dots. All right. Yesterday, the inflation numbers came out. We discussed it briefly because it came out during the 8:35 segment. So we made quick mention of it, but the Biden administration really did a victory lap here. Now, let's just be clear before I play you what Joe Biden said yesterday from the White House. Inflation right now is at 8.5%. That was announced yesterday. We were still sitting at an 8.5% inflation, which is so destructive.
Very destructive.
And just absolute.
That's the average of inflation.
That's the average.
Right?
Exactly. There are some items.
Some things are 20 and 30%.
Exactly.
More.
Average of this basket of goods and services that the economists look at to sort of get a flavor of what things are across the board. They look at these items in this index and they say, okay, it's sitting around 8.5%. That means some things may be lower, some things may be higher, but we're at 8.5%. Yesterday's number showed that from June to July, there was no change, right? Basically, we had
still at 8.5%.
Still at 8.5%.
Still at 8.5%.
There was zero change in the inflation. Inflation did not go down. Inflation did not go up. It stayed the same month to month. All right. Now listen to how Joe Biden announced it.
Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July. 0%.
Now, Liz, you're a you hold several doctorates, I believe.
Hundreds.
Including, let's just say macroeconomics. Why not?
Sure, why not?
Or microeconomics. What any?
Numbers. I have a PhD in numbers.
You do have that.
I don't, but it's close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you not have a PhD in anything?
I do, but not in numbers. But that's fine. But we digress.
Dr. Liz.
Oh.
Would you call that an accurate statement
no.
from the president of the
No.
US?
The only question I have is whether that was on the teleprompter or that's just a Biden gaffe that we've so used to where he misspeaks.
Well, that's a very good question, and I'll give you an answer. I think it was actually – there was no teleprompter at this event. I think he was using index cards. And I believe the answer, sadly, is – it was actually provided to him on his index cards because later in the day on social media, on Twitter, the spokesperson for the White House, I believe she goes by Corinne Jean-Pierre, she tweeted out on the official White House press secretary's account, "We just received news that our economy had 0% inflation
in
July."
That's amazing. You know, I wonder if these people who are obviously innumerate – really believe that, or if they think that no change means zero inflation.
Right.
I mean, never in the history of recorded statistics in America have we counted something that doesn't change as a 0%.
Right.
That's not how we use numbers.
There's no inflation. Unless they're thinking that this means, you know, this is now the baseline.
8%.
Right.
It's
like
the new
okay.
normal is
right.
just
this is the new normal. It's like
now.
Yes, all the prices just got inflated. All the prices are up. There's been no growth month to month. Therefore, this is it. This is the new baseline. This is the
starting
point.
I think they want
point.
The headline. They know that people read headlines more than they read stories. They want the headlines that say zero inflation.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Well, the headline they got from the New York Post is Biden White House claims US has zero inflation despite annual rate remaining 8.5%. It's 7:21.
Making sense of your world.
Thank you guys for all that you do.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
I listen to you every day.
Making sense of the news.
On News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
W-M-A-L. Yeah. It's 7:37. It's O'Connor and Company. We're thrilled to start your Thursday. Coming up at 7:45, Maria Leaf of The Examiner. Apparently, flip phones are making a big comeback. You have a lot of burner phones over there with the work you do, don't you, Liz?
I might.
Liz, was shelled with American greatness. Many aliases. Is that why she's got a little bit of a tinfoil hat situation going on?
Never be
here.
Too careful.
No, but listen, the way the news is these days. Coming up at 8:35, Jeremy Adams is going to join us to talk about the teacher shortage. He's got a book out, Hollowed Out, a warning about America's next generation. Why do we have a teacher shortage? A lot of reasons for it. Jeremy Adams will discuss it. But joining us right now, that is Liz Scheld, American Greatness, and the great podcast you do with Julie Kelly called
Happy Hour with Julie and Liz. You can subscribe on Apple.
Okay,
iTunes.
All right. Don't overdo it. You know, hey, we gave you a plug. What do you want?
I've got to promote myself, hey.
It's good stuff. It is actually go-to listening for all things January 6th. But also, I haven't heard you this week. I'm guessing you're talking about the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
It's going to be lit. We're going to be talking to Lee Smith, who I'm sure you've had on this show many times.
Oh, of course, Lee Smith. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that'll be fantastic.
It's gonna be hot.
All right, joining us right now, Reed Rubenstein, Senior Counselor and Director of Oversight for America First Legal. Boy, America First Legal is kind of a new shingle out there, but they're making a lot of waves. Well done, Reed. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Larry and Liz. Appreciate you having us on.
So let's talk about this raid on Trump's home here and some of the things that we've learned. First of all, what kind of investigation are you able to do within the auspices of America First Legal?
So we are able to use the Freedom of Information Act to obtain records, and we analyze them and make them available to folks and Congress and the public and some media. Hopefully part of what we do is catalyze other people and point directions, useful directions for obtaining information. What's interesting about the raid and our investigation, we've asked for information about President Biden's records, his vice presidential records, and his relationship with Hunter Biden. I know this because I hear it in liberal media that no person is above the law. But when it comes to Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, it seems like maybe in fact they are. And we're trying just to bring some transparency and hopefully some accountability.
Hi, Reed. This is Liz. So why are there documents in the Biden Library in Delaware that are not available to the public, and yet the National Archives aren't trying to get their hands on them? But the same is not true for President Trump.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And in fact, we've asked that question of Michael Horowitz, the Department of Justice Inspector General. And we've asked him to take a look at that and several other issues where it appears that the Biden administration is weaponizing the DOJ for the purpose of going after its political opponents.
Yeah.
Clear double standards.
We're speaking with Reed Rubenstein, America First Legal. Based on your understanding of federal law and the standard procedures for the FBI in a case like this, would it be standard procedure to not allow the president's attorneys to oversee the search and seizure process that these agents? Because based on the reports, the FBI agents went into rooms, refused to allow the president's representatives to see what was going on. And they just took what they wanted and they operated. They actually were told to turn their security cameras off so everything that they did would go unobserved. Is that, and again, these are reports we're hearing, but if that is the case, is that normal?
You know, it depends is the best answer. And I'm sorry, that's a lawyer's answer, I know. But it really does depend, Larry, on the situation and what's going on. What's highly unusual about this raid is if you compare what the Department of Justice has done in this case to what it did, say, with respect to, Hillary Clinton and her email, an entirely different approach. Oh, my goodness. With Clinton, and you remember the bleach pits and the 30,000 emails on the thumb drive and whatnot, there were all sorts of negotiations. There was an understanding between the department and Clinton's lawyers. In fact, the department was fine letting Clinton's lawyers hang on to all the documents. Quite different here. And again, if reports are to be believed, it's hard to understand because the former president had been negotiating and had been cooperating with the government.
So, Reed, did you get an explanation as to what was different with these new documents they were coming after this time, as opposed to what had previously been gotten through a negotiation process?
No, and what we need, and I know there's been court process to this effect, what we need to see is the warrant, and we need to hear from the Department of Justice, and we need to hear from the FBI. It is hard to overstate the significance of this event. We have unfortunately crossed a Rubicon in the way that we do politics and the way we do government and the way we do law enforcement in this country. And I think it was Marco Rubio and Ron DeSantis who used the term banana republic. It's apt. That is a very apt term. And this is a very scary thing. A very scary thing.
What's the timeline here? Because here's the thing. The Justice Department and the FBI, they're all, and the National Archives, for that matter, they're all going to, well, this is an ongoing investigation. We're not going to respond to FOIA requests. We're going to do anything like that. And of course, that's going to be their fig leaf.
Sure.
Are you more hopeful in terms of finding out why we can't access the former vice president's records, Joe Biden's records? Especially, there's certainly a public interest in knowing what interactions he had with Hunter Biden as vice president. Why can't we access his records? Those are our records, aren't they?
Those are questions we're going to be asking in the very, very near future, Larry. They're wonderful questions. And to me, what's odd is that the suspicions about the Biden family have been very strong, and the business relationships that they've had with particularly with foreign actors have been kind of common knowledge in town for very, very many years. But for some reason, there's been, up until now, a notable lack of curiosity. And in fact, one of the things you're going to see coming out, I suspect, more information about precisely what the FBI didn't do with Hunter Biden's laptop in 2020.
Yeah.
And why that was suppressed.
And no FBI raids regarding that
investigation
either.
Been.
Yeah, shocking. Nope. Reed Rubenstein, America First Legal. Thanks for doing great work there. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You know, Liz Sheld, you know the guy who comes on after us at 9 o'clock, Chris Plant. You know that Chris Plant guy?
Never heard of him.
I think you know him very well, actually.
Big fan.
Yes,
that's,
we love Chris Plant. We used to all make fun of him around here because he was the last man on the planet with a flip phone. He would brag about it.
He should brag about it.
He would brag. He was, it's like, admirable. We all had smartphones. We were all doing this thing.
He's
like, I have a flip phone.
Among my phones.
Well, yeah. He finally succumbed. And he got himself a smartphone. Now he's, you know, Mr.
He's one of us now.
Exactly. And now apparently, according to Maria Leaf, our pal Maria Leaf, who writes over the Washington Examiner, apparently flip phones are making a comeback. This is hilarious. Maria, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yes, can you believe flip phones are coming back, but they are flip smartphones.
Oh.
No.
This is not your T9 technology that we were all using in the early 2000s.
Right.
Or when, Chris Plant was using up until what, last week?
Right, yes,
snake.
Pretty much.
You can't play Snake on it, right?
Like the little snake thing. And when you had to text somebody, you would have to like hit
each
number three
times
until you got to the right letter. Oh,
yeah,
so
this is definitely not the case.
So tell me about this. So it's just the aesthetic design that people are loving. They miss that about their flip phones.
You know, in this case, this is Samsung, who has now released their Galaxy Z Flip 4 and the Fold 4 phones. They unveiled them yesterday.
Right.
It's not what you would think of as like a normal clamshell phone where you would close it. These are like either a little square or it folds over.
Oh, yeah.
But when you open it up, you do get the full screen, which there are other phones out on the market that are like this. These are just the newest ones.
I'm looking at it now, Maria, and it sort of looks like a pocket laptop.
That's pretty much what it's like, a foldable tablet, wouldn't you say? Like if it has that smart capacity.
Exactly. And the reason in part that Samsung is doing this is because they want to make it easier for people to make videos for social media. So now you can stand the phone up on its own because of the way you fold it, and you can make your reels or your other videos to post. And they do have an enhanced camera on there as well to help all of those people who want to sit there and scroll on Instagram or TikTok
make
that
reels.
Content.
Oh, come on, Maria. We know you're on TikTok. We've seen you dancing in the streets.
Listen, you've seen me dancing other places too, but we're not going to get into that right now.
Okay.
But the thing is, these phones are available for pre-sale. The Flip 4 is $999, 6.7-inch screen on that one. The Galaxy Fold 4, $1,799.99. And again, these are pre-sale. They're going to ship out soon.
$1,000 and $1,800 for a flip phone.
Well, it's a mini computer. Basically, it's a tablet, a foldable tablet with that technology.
Crazy.
The cost is because the screen folds in half, which is, you know, that's like another step up on our technology.
I was promised a return of the flip phone, and now all you're giving me is like an advanced
$2,000 flip
Maria,
phone.
Maria,
that's all.
Could we just get a flip phone? Just like a regular old dumb flip phone?
Very hard.
You can still buy non-smart flip phones. I believe you still can. They are considerably cheaper. Everybody is so used to the smartphone that to have one to be able to fold up, and you can save your screen this way. If you drop it, you're not going to have to worry that, oh, I just cracked my screen and it's going to cost me amount of money to get it fixed.
You know, I want to.
Hopefully, Apple will get on this bandwagon at some point. That's what my fingers are crossed for.
Apple is sort of following these days instead of leading, aren't they? I want to go all the way back to like that big ass brick phone that they had in American
Nokia,
Psycho.
One of those Nokias, like the candy bar phone.
It was like you could when you weren't on the phone, you could do your curls with it and tone your biceps. Is that coming?
We call that the Zach Morris phone, right, Larry?
Yeah, exactly. Zach Morris monologue moment.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet you rocked one of those back in the day.
All right, Maria. Never mind. Everyone's already Googling about where you're appearing at the local dance club. So we've already lost the plot on this one.
Bring some smartphones and sell them there, and I'll make a little profit. How about that?
When are these out again? They're available now for pre-ordering?
They are available for pre-sale now. They will ship in the next couple of weeks. Apple will be making its announcement on the iPhone 14 sometime in September. And we don't know a lot, but we do know it's to have an enhanced battery, but also an enhanced cost, possibly of up to 15% more than you paid for your previous iPhones.
Thank you, Maria.
So we're going to stay tuned for that.
It's always good to hear your voice. Could you give us a quick Maria Leaf, WMAL.com?
You know, Larry, just for you, I will.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Lee on WMAL and WMAL.com.
It's 7:53.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.